This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
It's 12:35, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on this Wednesday. Glad to have you here, and great to have AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne joining us, too, on the Midday Show. Congressman, thanks for your time.
Sean, good to be with you again.
And a lot to talk about here. First of all, I've been kind of seeing what's the situation right now with the recall to Washington from Speaker Pelosi?
Well, we were told yesterday that it's still on, that we're going to have to be there on Saturday to vote on at least one piece of legislation that would block the reforms of the Postal Service and inject another $25 billion into it. You know, that the Postal Service has lost almost $80 billion since 2007. It's because its business model has changed. It used to carry the snail mail that you and I would send out. We do email now. And it used to carry a lot of packages, which has now basically been taken over by FedEx, UPS, and Amazon. So its sort of entire business model had to change, and it hasn't. And so it's hemorrhaging money. And so what the Mr. DeJoy, the new director, has been trying to do is to bring some, change their business model. He's got a background in that. He's a logistics expert, had his own company, and just trying to make the changes that need to be made. But the Democrats got wind of what he was trying to do, which is the real thing, and they didn't like it. So now they're trying to tie it to problems with mail-in ballots, which is totally phony baloney, by the way, and try to block the reforms that the Postal Service desperately needs.
And these reforms, like you've talked about, this is not something that just popped up. This is why DeJoy came in, right? I mean, he's coming in, like you said, with that logistics background. I don't know why somebody wanted to try to do this, but this guy wants to try to make this thing, post office, run a little better for the pocket of the taxpayer.
Why? I mean, that's what we want people to do. I mean, there are over 600,000 employees and contractors that work for the Postal Service. It is huge. And, you know, it's going to run an $11 billion deficit this year. We have got to get our arms around this and change it so that it's got a real mission. It's meeting that mission efficiently. But boy, if you start trying to do that, and you might affect the jobs of 600,000 people, most of whom are unionized, they fight back, and they're Democrats or they're allies, and they're using this whole thing about mail-in ballots as some reason that we've got to, you know, jump back to Washington on a Saturday. You know, we've got a major pandemic going on. We're still recovering economically from what happened earlier this year, and we need to do some stuff about that. We've got the fiscal year ends September 30th, and a new one starts October 1. We have nothing going to fix that. So instead of dealing with all of those important things, we're going to run back to Washington on a Saturday to vote on a bill to block reforms in an agency that desperately needs reforms. It's just beyond crazy. It's crazy, crazy.
You know, with so much money and so many moving parts of this, I know there's a lot of stories. But one I heard the other day, and I just have part of this, and maybe you've heard it, or maybe if not, we can find out more details. But it was some delivery that USPS was doing, some part of a process that every time they went and delivered that piece of mail or package or whatever it was, they would lose between $1.50 and like $3. Like they knew that. In doing this delivery, they would lose between $1.50 and $3. I don't know how you would go on like that. I don't know how you don't make a switch. I don't know who out there thinks that's a great thing.
Well, you've got a very ossified structure. You have a lot of good people that work for the Postal Service. Don't get me wrong, a lot of good people. But it's an ossified structure that has not changed with the changing demands for Postal Service services. And where we are right now is that it's got to have this change, but the very structure of the organization is fighting back against the change. And I don't, you know, change is never pleasant, and particularly if you've been working in an organization for a long time. But, you know, if this were the private sector, they'd either make the change or they go bankrupt and be gone. And we should treat this as seriously as a private sector venture would do and get it fixed.
So I don't know, have you seen what you're going to be voting on yet? That's always a question when you go to Washington. Have you seen?
I've not seen it. I'm, I'm told what's in it. I think they're actually going to post it either tonight or tomorrow. So we'll see the actual text of it. But what we've been told is it's basically a bill that does two things. Number one, it blocks any reforms. Here's an agency that needs reforms. So this would block reforms.
No change. And so no changes allowed.
Yeah. No, okay. Don't make any changes. And here's another $25 billion. That's crazy. You know, but that's what we do in Washington now. It's crazy.
Then, yes, that is crazy because, like, you lined out the things that have not been answered. And here are folks, not just in AL1, but all over the country that are going, where are we on the addendum bills? Where are we on the HEALS Act or the here? I mean, what about the unemployment? What about the stimulus checks? What about the PPP? You know, given more time for PPP. Where are we with that, Congressman?
We are dead in the water. That's why the president took the unilateral executive order that he issued last week to try to do something because the Democrats just won't negotiate. They think it's in their interest not to have a deal with the president. So instead of doing what we should be doing, they're having their virtual convention show every night, and then they go run us up to Washington and deal with a phony issue on Saturday. Look, Barack Obama destroyed 14,000 mailboxes as part of an effort to try to get the cost under control of the Postal Service. This isn't some Republican conspiracy to do something about mail-in ballots in the fall. That's not the case at all. We need to reform this agency, but the Democrats are once again just using this issue as another way to hurt the president and at the same time, keep us from reforming a part of government that desperately needs reform.
It's frustrating. Like, for example, we've been talking about this week what you mentioned about the picking up the post office boxes. And I'll say this for anybody, wherever you come politically, you see some story up there that really seems like, wow, this really super serves my interest. Maybe go look at another source on that, because we talked about this, the picture that everybody's rallying around with all those post office boxes. That's a picture from Reuters about them repainting and refabbing them and putting them back out. But there's people that are just screaming mad about what the Republicans are doing, and that's not even what the picture's about.
Well, I mean, truth and reality just gets in the way of what everybody on that side wants to believe. And they've got, you know, their allies in the national news media that just continue to fan this stuff. It's not accurate, and everybody knows it's not accurate. It's just, you know, Michelle Obama's up the other night talking about, oh, you know, Donald Trump put these children, these immigrant children in cages. Those were the very things that her husband built. I mean, they just take their narrative and run with it. They don't care about the facts.
What about another, this is just kind of an idea here. I don't know what traction it's gotten, but this is part of this narrative from the Democrats about the Postal Service and other, these are all the insurance policy, to use that term, to, if President Trump wins re-election, to say it's not a legitimate win.
Oh, I think they're going to come up with all sorts of crazy stuff if he wins. And I think they'll try to, well, you know, as soon as he got elected last time, they said we can't give him any credibility. We've got to undermine him every chance we get. We've got to be the resistance. They'll stop at nothing. They've already proved that. I mean, and the idea that they're nominating Joe Biden, God bless him, to be the president of the United States, they don't believe he should be president. He's just the vehicle that they've got to try to beat Trump, and they're going to do everything they can to try to make him look good.
What about that? So we get one view of Joe Biden. Just got done talking about it with Cameron Smith, and it, you know, he's befuddled, he's a gaffe machine, all these things we're, you know, hearing about it. He says things that if Republicans would say them, they would be blasted out of Washington. But are we getting a spun version of Joe Biden? Have you had, you know, time in Washington to – is that the real thing?
No, it's not the real thing. Now, look, Joe Biden's like any other human being. He's got pluses and minuses. He's got strengths and weaknesses. But he has a terrible – it's gotten worse over time. He's got a terrible propensity to say the wrong thing in the wrong place. And I don't think a lot of these times that he means to do, he just doesn't have control of
right.
the connection between his brain and his mouth. And some of the things he's saying, if he means them, are just – profoundly disturbing. I mean, he's trying to portray himself as a moderate, but in order to secure this nomination, he's made all sorts of commitments to the far left. And I guarantee you they expect him to deliver on those commitments. So this idea that he's a moderate is ridiculous. And this idea that Kamala Harris is a moderate is totally ridiculous. Go look at her positions on the issue. She is not a moderate.
And that, but that's one of the things that's being spun, correct? That she's coming in for a moderation. It feels so strange, but she's coming in to moderate Joe Biden or give some kind of. Yeah, it just seems strange to me. It's a California. She's not just from California. There's plenty of conservatives from California, but she's not one of them.
No, I guess she seems moderate if you compare her to AOC, or you compare her to Ilhan Omar. And, you know, Joe Biden, I guess, is moderate compared to Bernie Sanders. But think of the standards we just set out there. I mean, yeah, they're a little bit to the right of those people, but being a little bit to the right of those people is being very, very, very far left. I mean, they want Medicare for all. They want the Green New Deal. They want to take away your Second Amendment rights. They want to defund the police. I mean, all this crazy stuff that we're saying, you know, this is far left crazy stuff, they bought into because they had to buy into it to get the party unified. Well, they're unified, all right. They're unified around a bunch of far left stuff that the American people do not want.
But you've talked to us before about this, that, you know, you'll be talking about a bill or something that's happening in the House, and you talk to Democrats in there that are shaking their heads, right, with where that's gone. Are they just going to stay in lockstep? Do you see maybe after the election, any kind of civil war within the Democrat Party happening? Not everybody's that far left, I can't imagine, that's got a D behind their name.
No, I think they're going to stay unified between now and Election Day. But regardless of the outcome on Election Day, they've got some big internal issues. And I've been sort of listening. Now, the ones that I talk to the most tend to be the ones that are not going to be in the far left. That's where my relationships are. But they're worried from two perspectives. One is they're worried that the American people are going to say everybody in the Democratic Party believes all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing they're worried about is that if they actually passed it, I mean, good Lord, it would set them back for a generation. I think they know that. So they've got some real big issues that they have to deal with. And they always talk about how Republicans fight among ourselves. Our divisions within the Republican Party are nothing compared to their divisions. I mean, they're just infinitely small compared to their divisions. So I just, it's going to be interesting to watch them, whatever happens in November, how they're going to deal with those divisions in their party. My feeling is that the far left is taking over the Democratic Party, and there's nothing that those friends of mine that are not far left can do about it.
Do you see those friends that are Democrats there, is it age-based, or are there young ones that young Democrats there that are moderate and older Democrats? Is it specifically by age?
No, I wouldn't say it's specifically by age. I don't think that's accurate. It's the cleavage between what I call the old liberalism, okay, and old liberalism is still liberalism, okay? Between the old liberalism and what they call progressivism, what I call socialism, and the parties being pulled more and more into the socialist direction. I mean, can you imagine Hillary Clinton 4 years ago coming out for Medicare for All or for the Green New Deal? Now it's expected.
It's like the middle. It's the middle of the spectrum, or, you know, or at least that's what some, you know, would say. Those that have the loudest voices, I guess, among the Democrats will say that's basic. That's starting point A and B, and then we'll move on from there.
Right. Now, one of the interesting things to me has been some of the conversations I've had with friends of mine who happen to be black and Democrats, and they are not that liberal. They just aren't. They always vote Democrats, but they just don't have liberal positions like that. And I just wonder how much longer people like that can be wed to a party that is so much further to the left than they are. But, you know, I've talked to them, and they've expressed to me that they're Democrats. They're going to vote Democrat. But in the same breath, they'll say, but I don't agree with this, and this the party's trying to do. And so I'm saying, you know, at some point, the party's left you, just like that party's left a lot of people, and we'll see how that turns out.
Yeah, you wonder what that, I mean, obviously below 50% agreement, then you got to look to another party. But, yeah, where do you start getting, Because I don't think, heck, I don't know. There's not a party in existence. I agree with everything that's on their planks of their platform. But yeah, I think you got to be in the, 75-80% agreement to consider a party. And if you lose that and it goes any further south, then when do you bail? And then, of course, the question is, where do you go? I guess do you go independent, or like we talked about, is there kind of a split in the Democrat Party, and then does another party come of that, or is it just those people move to be independents?
The last time we formed in America a lasting new political party was in the late 1850s and 1860, when the Republican Party came out of basically the old Whig Party. So you had the Bull Moose Party for Teddy Roosevelt that didn't last. You did have a populist party in the late 19th century that didn't last. We've had some other efforts at independent-type parties, which never last. We've got a two-party system in this country, and you have to choose which one is closest to you. And as the two parties have moved further and further apart, that just becomes clearer and clearer which one is conservative and which one is now trending radically socialist. And, that's where we are in America today. Now, I respect my Democrat friends. They're good people. I'm not saying they're bad people. We just have a difference of opinion. But some of them are telling me I just can't agree with what they're trying to do on X, Y, and Z. I'm like, man, they're leaving you. The Democrat Party is leaving you. And you may not like some of the things in the Republican Party, but we're beginning to be a lot closer to you than your old Democratic Party is.
There it is. And that's one of the questions going into November. And as we wrap up, Congressman, I know we talked about it at the beginning, but I'm seeing text about this again. The holdup for PPP, unemployment, I know the president's made his executive action, but from a legislative point, you said you're at a stalemate here for HEROES or HEALS Act or any of them? Nothing going?
There are no discussions going on. We got a conference call this afternoon with Mark Meadows to bring us up to speed, but I think it's going to be a pretty quick conference call because there's really nothing to tell us.
I mean, I appreciate your honesty as always, but that people hear that and think, well, they're working on it, right? They're working on it. They're going to get something done. They're going to get something figured out.
No. There's nothing. There are no discussions, at least among the principals or people or acting on behalf of the principals. There are no discussions. Now, it could happen tonight. It could happen tomorrow. I don't think it is. I don't think anything's going to happen until we get back after Labor Day. I said that to you before, and I'm still in the position of believing it's not going to happen until after Labor Day.
Wow. Congressman Bradley Byrne, as always, we appreciate your time. Thanks for being on with us, and we'll check back with you real soon.
Sure, Sean. Good to be with you.
I think I've left feeling like I was last time the congressman said that. Just kind of shaking. Not kind of. Not just figuratively. Literally shaking my head in here. Nothing. Nothing's going on. A real stalemate. Not like, hey, we're kind of working on it. We're working through some. Nothing. Phew. Be right back.